Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire. He knocks it down.
Ferraro slammed it home.
Garland upstairs. Oh!
Sexton inside. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The NBA draft lottery is just hours away, but no matter where the Cavs are picking, player development is the clearest path to this team making a leap in the future. So we have a very special episode today all about that topic. Joining me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. I'm starting to get the willies. We're getting close to ping pong time. You know, you try not to care because it doesn't actually, you know, our concern has little to do with the result, but that's not stopped us for the duration of our Cavs fandom. So why get healthy now?
Oh, absolutely. I still believe that we can will things into existence, and I'm still trying to will Sir CeCe to the Cavs into existence with that first overall pick. But no matter where the Cavs are picking, as I said, player development is such a big part of that, and joining us today is a very special guest, Cleveland Cavaliers shooting coach Andrew Olson. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's an honor to be on your show.
Is it?
It is. Yeah. You know, when we get opportunities like this, you know, talk basketball, you know, what's better?
I couldn't agree more. And you know what? It's so nice to be able to get some behind the scenes information because from an outsider perspective, especially me living outside the country, so often like organization is basically reduced to two people. It's usually like head coach and general manager. But one of the cool things about the pandemic was without crowds being there, you really got a sense of how large the coaching staffs are, how many people are involved when it comes to running a team. And with the draft lottery being so close, I actually would love to start there and just kind of get a sense for what your involvement is, what the involvement is from the coaching staff when it comes to evaluating prospects. In the past, we've had Colin Sexton, Isaac Okoro that didn't necessarily have strong jump shots in college. How much consulting is there with yourself and the rest of the coaching staff when it comes to what's our confidence level that we can develop a jump shot with a prospect?
For sure. Yeah, no, that's a great question. And obviously something that I take pride in. I will, I guess, speak on the coaching staff as a whole to start. But we have scouts and a great department that they're doing the bulk of the work. And when it gets down to, you know, after the season, we have more time, we're asked to evaluate and observe the film and watch a lot of the players that we're looking at. Obviously tomorrow and everything that unfolds will dictate probably who we look at more so than others. But that's kind of our time to really break down the film and give our thoughts. We talk kind of collectively as a coaching staff, and then those messages are kind of relayed up through the ranks, you know, throughout the organization. And then when it comes to shooting, I am obviously someone that they ask, you know, to break down in even more detail. And so I kind of do my own report when it comes to shooting, and I have an evaluation process that I go through that, you know, for example, last year, I you know, we kind of zeroed in on X amount of players, and I do my detailed analysis, and I sit down with kind of the decision makers and present the information. They ask questions, and it's a fun process to go through and something that I, you know, thoroughly enjoy.
How much art is there in the science? You know, shooting is such a beautiful art, but you know, how much of these reports is here's the state of their jump shot versus here's the state of their jump shot and here's what I think we can do with it?
Right. So that's, you know, always the money question right there is, you know, how much can you quote unquote change someone? And I kind of come from the school of thought that anyone can get better. And now to what degree, that's where I kind of have a little formula and I dive in and kind of, you know, quote unquote nerd out. But, I really, you know, go through a process and try to make projections. And I feel like my, you know, process and the things that I do with that allow me to you know, make some accurate projections, and then also, you know, just kind of tell people, or at least, you know, have the foresight to say, hey, this might be more of a project or take a little longer than you maybe want. But yeah, those are the types of things that I kind of take pride in and am all, you know, constantly evaluating.
How much does past success factor into your evaluations? Like, you guys have obviously been looking at Colin Sexton, where he was in Alabama, to being a very good three-point shooter in his first year. Larry Nance has made big improvements. Jetty made improvements. Even Tristan was hitting threes his last year in Cleveland. Does that factor into your confidence of, hey, we can take on a player that has a jump shot that requires work? Or is it kind of a case-by-case basis with every player being a little unique?
Yeah, the not-so-fun answer is it is case-by-case because everyone has their own personality, their own work ethic. And you know, I think one of the hardest things to really tap into as a shooter is their mental state. And I think way too much emphasis is put on someone's shooting form. I think that it is important, but if you look at, you know, the history of basketball, the form of, you know, the best shooters that have ever played this game varies from Peja Stojakovic to Klay Thompson. And so when you're evaluating it, you know, to answer your question, the ability and their past performance is usually, you know, the meat of everything, where you're, you know, taking the numbers and you're saying, this is kind of the core at the, you know, this player's level. And, you know, can we take them up, you know, 5% or 10%, you know, whatever the numbers are, but free throw percentage and some of their past performance is usually, you know, the highest correlation.
With that in mind, just the fact that there are so many different releases in the NBA, and I have to imagine kind of consistent release point is one of the main things that you're looking at. But how do you decide when you get a new player in the organization, whether or not you approach it as, hey, he's got a consistent release point, but some of the mechanics are a little off, we might need to tweak things. How do you make the decision between tweaks to the jump shot or a full teardown where, hey, this is going to be a project, we want to revamp the jump shot because it's just not consistent enough that we can get it going in at a successful rate using your current form?
Right. And, you know, that's the one that as teachers, coaches, you're always kind of, you know, walking that fine line of, do we make the drastic changes and when, when it comes to someone that, you know, is struggling. But the interesting thing about these players is most of them are pretty successful getting to this point. And they've had a lot of success doing things their way, or their, you know, the way that they've had success. And so you're always kind of walking that fine line of, hey, you should change something that has got you to this point. And so
especially when I'm sure it's a little worse right when they start.
Like, exactly.
It's not like they make the change and it's awesome forever, right?
Exactly. And so that's always the fun part, right? Is navigating, you know, when, or introducing them to new things to, at the end of the day, you're just trying to get them to buy in. And the ones that do and embrace the changes, you know, have a lot of success. And then the other thing that's very difficult in the NBA is actually having all that time to, you know, make those changes, because there's so many games going on, and you don't have a week off, you know, during the season to make, you know, drastic changes. And there's a game tomorrow night and, hey, we need to make this change, but you know, we have three games over the next 6 days. So you got a little pressure to make those shots, but yeah, it's, you know, comes with the job, and you know, you got to navigate that throughout the season, navigate the personality. And you know, the one thing about a lot of our guys is, you know, they're gym rats. And so they really enjoy being in the gym, and getting them to do the extra work. You know, it's a lot more difficult to do my job when guys are not in there.
Yeah. I mean, and that seems to be, it does feel like folks are starting to trickle into the Cavs facility. And I think that's the other thing people, at least, you know, younger me didn't realize, is that a lot of these players have their own coaches that they go work out with in the off season. How different is it when you're able to have a full off season or, you know, a month of run at the facility?
Yeah, it makes a ton of difference. And kind of go back a few years, that was what I was doing before I got this job, is I was one of those guys. I was the guy that didn't work for the team, but worked for the guy. And, that was something that I'm familiar with. And I think that as time goes on, we live in Cleveland, we don't live in LA, we don't live in some of these places that guys spend their off season. So getting them in the gym, they've been, you know, already in the gym this off season, but time, it's a great indicator to, produce, production and performance. And so you got to put in that time, and having the same messages and the same coaches and everyone kind of relaying those messages, that factors into this. But yeah, it's like getting on the same page, you know, building a relationship if they do have other guys. And it's just, something that we have to, constantly do.
What's the biggest difference from going from a kind of a personal training to, working within the framework of a larger organization? What's the biggest change?
The biggest change is just understanding, that they're the team goals, right? And if I work for the player, I don't know every decision that's kind of going on that is leading to where they get the ball or how their playing time or, whatever it is. And, the intricacies of their offense and everything. So being within the organization, you understand all the layers that kind of go into those decisions, and you understand the time and, when guys are tired and when they're not and everything. So the picture is painted a little more clear for their development. And that's something that we're constantly, tracking and monitoring and obviously communicating with the different departments, is just getting on the same page and making sure that what we're doing is in the best interest of each player.
Is that one of the biggest changes between working on a jump shot in the season and in the off season, where during the year it's, hey, it's a little more situational, we know how you're going to be used, so we're going to have you practicing those shots, while off season is maybe more big picture tweaks and working on mechanics and things like that? Or is there a different way that you approach things when you're dealing with the regular season versus the off season?
Yeah, I'd say the biggest difference is, when we talked about those macro off season, is the word I always use is awareness. And you have more time and opportunity to make them more aware of their jumper and, the mechanics and all the details and the thought process. And so it's more thinking, and that's usually something you don't want them doing as frequently during the season when they need to worry about coverages and, who they're guarding, night in, night out. And so I think that's, to me, the always the introductory to the off season is getting them to become more aware of their shot. And surprisingly, a lot of players, and even myself, like someone that I think is very detail oriented, I played in, overseas and was, always thinking basketball. But as the time, even when I was older and stopped playing, like how much more I knew. And so you always go, oh, if I knew this back then. And so I think that there's always something that, players can learn and dive a little deeper in with their shot. And I think the off season is a great opportunity to become more aware of that.
So something, and I'm sorry, Justin, I could tell you're getting ready to go and I cut you right off.
Don't you worry.
I like to relate things back to my personal life because I'm selfish and small-minded. And, so I, for the first time in my career, I've been managing people, and there's a lot of coaching involved there at the old day job. And something I've learned about managing and coaching is that your wins aren't as obvious as they are when you're a doer. you know, like for you, I'm sure when you were playing overseas, you had a good game, you know, you did well. Whereas coaching wins are a little, you're kind of trying to figure out how much credit to take for someone. What's a win that you've had since joining the Cavs organization that you feel something that you feel a particular pride in?
Oh, I mean, what a great question. There's a lot that I remember, but I just think the first one is my first year I joined the Cavs. Colin Sexton was a rookie, and he was somebody that was regarded as coming into the league without a jump shot. And we're kind of, you know, going through the whole season, and all of a sudden there's this realization that he might be 40% from three point line. And as a, you know, shooting coach and somebody that was with him, you know, after practice and spending a lot of time with him, you know, that was just one of those moments where you're like, wow, this, you know, this is what I'm doing. At least it's not hurting him. Hopefully it's helping him. But and he's the type of person that he puts in the time and everything. And so he's easy to work with, and he wants to do well. But that was kind of that first moment in that season, and we were struggling as a team, but you take those wins and you try to find the fact that if a young player is developing and making progress and kind of doing something that people didn't really think he would do, or at least, you know, he's doing well, you know, that's a win.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the biggest surprises for me. I remember that season. Like, I'm not someone that watches a lot of college. Like, I just don't have the time. I'm fine admitting that. I usually will bring on someone that does watch a lot of college and gives us opinions. So when the Cavs drafted a guard that wasn't projected to be a good shooter, to me, like, automatically I was kind of concerned about that. I don't really like that.
Oh, we were really
fit.
Grumpy. I think that would be the better way to frame it.
I don't like the fit of non-shooting guards in today's league. And, like, I can even remember an example like DeMar DeRozan, someone that has a great work ethic but never really put it together on the outside. And I've been really impressed, though, the last few years of the strides that this team makes during the season. Like, Isaac Okoro gets better throughout the year. Garland gets better throughout the year. Sexton gets better throughout the year. Larry didn't really have the chance this season because he was in and out with injuries. But given the nature of this season, with it being so weird, so many games in such a short period of time, were there any creative ways that you approached working on these aspects of guys' games? Because I have to imagine without practice, you kind of have to find other ways to make an impact.
Yeah. So a couple, one not so creative was just the literal, like, Isaac was a player that was in a very unique situation. And kind of to answer your question a different way, but the fact that everything was pushed back and there was no summer league and the normal opportunity for us and the amount of time that we get to spend with somebody was just thrown out the window. And so he was a player that, you know, came in and more defensive minded, and everyone kind of, you know, saying the same things, if he could develop a jump shot and everything. So a lot of those, you know, development were kind of put on hold when it came to, you know, him. Mm-hmm. And so he is, you know, a literal player and hardworking. And so with him, it was, hey, let's just stay after, let's meet later. And so, you know, we have the gun and some of the shooting machines and everything. And it was, you know, him and I just working late at night. And so, you know, not very creative, but that's, you know, he was young enough and had enough energy to come in and work. But I would say that the creative ways and is just kind of using film and breaking things down instead of actually getting on the court. And I think there's so much that people can learn and become, you know, the word that I used prior is aware, you know, with the film. And so there's moments before games that I'll have a clip of a guy's last, you know, 20 shots or whatever it is, and sit down with them and kind of show them, like, hey, this is where we were, this is where things are going, you know, good or bad. And, you know, trying to take those mental reps with them. And, you know, something that I enjoy doing is getting their input and letting them discuss like what is going on. And sometimes it's a quick mental fix. And I think everyone's rush is always, okay, this mechanical fix, which is physical, is going to lead to X and Y. But often it's just kind of a mental adjustment.
So I think it is kind of the let's talk about Isaac part of the podcast, because obviously he brings so much to the table as a player right now, already as a defensive force, as a finisher at the rim. And I think everyone knows that the jumper is likely what separates him from being a pretty good player and being a really, really great player. What's the offseason plan for a player like that?
Yeah, so his approach is, you know, kind of won, you know, that shot, and he made, you know, great strides. He, I would say, I think, you know, at one point he was 25% from three and made some strides to getting over 30%, you know, towards the end of the year. And so progress was made. I think he has become a lot more aware of, you know, the mechanics of his shot and what's necessary. And so those are, I think, number one for him. And then what, you know, we always try to look at the good in everything. And you know, the end of the season was an amazing opportunity for him to get the ball in his hands and run more pick and roll and initiate some actions and, you know, kind of show him as an all-around player. Mm-hmm. And that's something that he's done his whole life and is a little more comfortable doing. And I thought it was, you know, great to just see how naturally it came to him, but now it's also get him, you know, put him in the right positions, get him to understand his gifts and put him in position to, you know, use his body, be physical when he gets downhill. And, you know, from a shot creation standpoint, getting him to understand what shots are possible. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, his natural ability throughout his, you know, early young career being, you know, 20 years old, was get downhill and use my body and just kind of jump and figure it out once I did that. And he was able to do that. But, you know, he showed great signs of his ability to finish. And so we're not going to want to take that away from him, but just kind of figure out the angles and the timing and the patience that he can use, because he's, you know, a natural playmaker and he's a willing passer. And so getting them to understand those offensive opportunities.
One of the ways that he kind of creates a shot, when you talk about shot creation, is those step back jumpers. And for whatever reason, it seems like those step back threes seem to go in a lot more consistently for him than kind of the catch and shoot opportunities. Is there something mechanical with that, or is it the mental side that you were talking about earlier, where it's just, all right, I'm going through the shot, I know it's step back jump shot, I'm not thinking, I'm just firing.
It's not
away.
Even just the success rate, which it must be higher.
It's got to be.
Like literally, like even his entire body language, because he can be kind of like a compact player physically, and it feels like everything just like unfurls when he does these step backs. Like, why do you think that is? Why do you think his level of comfort is so much better in that situation?
Well, the simple answer is, if you ask him what his move is, he says a step back. So he loves his step back, and he is extremely confident in it. And so I think, like I said, the short answer is that his confidence level is just, you know, very, very high. And from a coach's standpoint, in my eye, is there's a rhythm to his shot when he's taking that. Whereas when he's a catch and shoot player right now, he has a couple different rhythms. And so that step back is kind of in the flow with the dribble and the steps, and the rhythm of it is just a little more fluid. And, you know, another key word in shooting is, you know, smoothness and rhythm and fluidity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most really good shooters have it. So, I think just the flow of it, it is a little bit more natural versus that catch and shoot right now.
So when
and consistent.
So when you see a natural flow in situations like that, does that increase your confidence that he can translate that to other areas versus a player that might just kind of be out in the wild trying to figure out exactly what the best way to go is? Like there's a template there, right? That there's these situations where he is shooting naturally, and does that increase your confidence that that can come in different areas? Because I mean, he's another one of those guys that just has that level of a work ethic, and if the mechanics get there and his confidence gets there and he's smoother, like, to me it feels like another situation where we might see like Sexton like growth when it comes to his outside shooting.
Yeah, I think it's obviously encouraging and what you want. You want to, you know, as a coach and in these situations, you're always kind of looking for those little golden nuggets, and you see something and you want to run with it. And so I think that, you know, you use those opportunities as teaching moments to get him to, you know, create that consistency in all of his shots. And so, yeah, I think when it comes to that, we're extremely high on him and optimistic, and especially with his work ethic. And yeah, but to the point, you know, I think there's this component of the physical and the mental that kind of need to come together. And we're hoping that this offseason is, you know, a huge step in that direction.
I think an instinct, I was just thinking about this interview earlier today, and I was thinking about how we're going to have a shooting coach on, and my instinct is going to be asked about guys who are developing their jumpers. And because obviously that's who you're working with on the mechanics of their jumper. I want to ask a question about a very, very, very good shooter in Darius Garland,
right,
who can drive Cavs fans a little crazy because he doesn't pull at the rate that we want him to. What kind of conversations do you have with a player like Darius, who is, you know, definitely the purest shooter on the team? Well, him or probably Dylan. But like the 3-point attempt rate isn't where maybe the coach, I mean, I think JB said it on the record multiple times, like, hey, we got to shoot more threes. Like, what kind of talks do you have with a player like that?
Yeah, it comes with the job, right? Is in all ways, shapes, or form. Like, you know, my running joke with my job is there's always going to be a job, because until, you know, who knows when, there's not going to be a perfect shooter. So everyone can get better. And, you know, the best shooters in the world getting, you know, shooting 40%, you know,
and there's a reason Steph still gets up like 10,000 threes a day.
Exactly.
He doesn't like, well, done.
Yeah.
Yes. And so, you know, there's always ways to get better. And so with some of that, it comes more naturally to Darius. You know, we have those conversations, and it becomes showing him the film, showing him the numbers, and showing him, you know, that it's not your form, it's not anything, it's the decision making. Mm-hmm. And he knows very well that a lot of people have sat down and had that conversation, you know, with him. And so that's, you know, part of our job is to shot selection. And I think that becomes one of those things where it's mental, right? Your form can change in certain situations, but for the most part, if you take better shots, you're probably going to make more shots, and that all factors into your percentage. And you know, I guess part of the lingo that we've talked with him is that he needs to be comfortable not shooting a certain percentage. Like, if, you know, creating that mindset where if he looks at the stat sheet that, you know, early on, not necessarily looking at the percentage, but the field goal attempts, and getting that ratio to be, you know, more on par with, you know, some of the guys that are at the same position as him.
Yeah. The interesting thing with Garland too is when he was taking more shots, like in April, where you really kind of saw him blossom, where he's getting like 21 points a game, 7.5 assists. When he's more aggressive and he's taking those shots, it's creating opportunities for other people. And that was one of the really encouraging things that I saw with Garland. But it is going to be interesting to see how he kind of navigates that, right? Because it's such a demanding position when you are a point guard, where you got all this responsibility to make sure that everyone else is going. And it really seemed like with the Cavs this season, even though you have good shooters like Garland and Sexton, a lot of this seems to be fighting those natural tendencies. Like Garland loves to get into the lane and create shots for other people. Sexton's so gifted as a slasher that sometimes the three-point shot won't be there, right? And the other factor, of course, was just the scheduling. Like it, when it was the third game in four nights, or the second set of third game in four nights, you could always tell that the three-point shots weren't really going to be there. The team wasn't going to get them up because it tired legs.
Right. Yeah, no, it's this past season was very, very tough on our players. And, you know, with all the injuries, we don't need to go into depth about that. But yeah, no, to your point, it is fighting a lot of, you know, what comes natural to them. Mm-hmm. And you can scale it back even further, just the amount of success that these guys had at the lower levels and the emphasis on, you know, just, you know, scoring versus taking specific shots or whatever it was. And you don't have access to the numbers and the analytics and everything. And so, you know, their maturity and experience as players, it's growing, and it takes years. It takes them to understand that defenses are playing you a certain way to probably make you take a certain shot. And mm-hmm. the one that's open is probably the one that they want you to take.
One of my favorite tweets I saw all year. It was a bit of a cynical tweet, but it was, you know, it was mid-season during one of those doldrums. And it was like, down double digits, time to take some runners, you know, because like that is kind of their default. Those are the shots that they were getting. And I do feel like that's one of the things that as fans who don't have the visibility into what's going on in practice and what's going on in film sessions is, the on the record stuff from the coaching staff and from the players is the stuff that we want to hear, which is, we know we got to shoot more threes. We know we have to break from our natural tendencies, even if some of those tendencies are what make these players great. And that's what I feel like is such an interesting challenge. Like on the Darius front, is him being such a willing passer and prober is what makes him raise the ceiling of the offense. And you're kind of saying, yes, but also shoot more threes. And it's got to be an interesting challenge to like know how hard you can push him that without kind of neutering what makes him such a special playmaker.
For sure. Yeah, it's that, you know, that push pull, that constant struggle of getting them to develop, also doing what's best for the team and everything. And so you know, those are conversations we have, you know, frequently. And to your point earlier, that seeing them make progress, and I thought Darius made a lot of progress this season and showed a lot of signs of growth. And so you know, that's where my job kind of factors in, and the player development staff and the things that we're doing as a coaching staff as a whole is just get these players better. And you know, at the end of the day, that's our job.
Do you change your approach when you're dealing with a young player versus a veteran? Like if they trade for someone that's been in the league for an extended period of time and has experience, do you change how you approach someone that's been in the league that has that track record? Or is it more about the personality of how receptive they are to certain types of coaching that dictates how you handle developing a jump shot?
Yes, the boring answer, but it's true, is it's just like it varies on everyone's personality. So it's not a quote unquote blue book or blueprint for you know, a rookie versus a 8-year vet. It's their personality, it's their work ethic, and you know, the main thing is the buy-in, and how can you get them to buy in to their own growth and also that growth benefiting the team. And that's what we're always trying to do is find a way to, you know, navigate their personality and mesh with them and get them to you know, want to buy in.
I know we probably got to let you go pretty soon, but one player I did want to ask about, because he's an interesting case in terms of a player that appears to have some pretty good touch on his mid-range jumpers, you know, a touch around the rim, but you know, isn't a three-point shooter really at all at this point in his career, and that's Jared Allen. Is that someone that you're pushing his range out regularly? Is that part of the team's plans?
Yeah, so back to last year and the fact, you know, we were talking about Isaac and him coming in late and the opportunity to really assess, analyze, and kind of create a plan was limited. Mm-hmm. And then that's even expedited when we trade for somebody and they come in mid-season and you're just trying to kind of piece them in. And so the development with a guy like him, where adding that three to his game is going to be, you know, take time and everything. So that me personally wasn't on the high priority to-do list last season, but you know, moving forward, those are things that we talk about all the time. And having him in Cleveland, you know, this offseason is going to allow me the opportunity to sit down and go through the whole process with him.
Yeah, it's really nice to see that those guys are back in market frequently. They're already working on their games, where after how difficult this season was, you'd think most people just kind of want to decompress for a month or two and enjoy that time off. How often is it you approaching a player about tweaks and adjustments versus the player coming to you saying, hey, this is a goal that I have personally on what to work with my game. How can I get there?
Yeah. To answer that question, there's kind of like three avenues. And one is the me going to them and approaching them. The other one is that, like you just said, that they might come up and ask questions, which happens, you know, a little less frequently, because back to my earlier point, like a lot of these guys just, they've had success or they've done something a certain way, and they've, you know, if they struggled at some point and went through a slump, they've bounced back and they, you know, revert back to something. But and then the other way that we do is, you know, I will talk to the, you know, certain coaches work with certain guys more frequently. And so I'm kind of like the middleman, and I'm giving them my assessment, because at the end of the day, like, even if I don't, you know, work with a Jared Allen day in, day out, I am analyzing every single shot that every, you know, player takes and every shot that they take during the season. And so I have information, I do my own work, and I pass along that information to the coaching staff. And so it's that constant, how do we make these guys better? And so even if I'm physically not the one out there instructing or doing anything, I try to have an impact and help, you know, expedite their growth. And, you know, I try to do that with, you know, the information that I break down every day.
Is to take it in a different direction, is Colin Sexton as hard of a worker as people say he is? Like, do you have any good Colin Sexton as a maniac stories?
So the short answer is yes. He loves to be in the gym. I right off the top of in. I think this is a good thing, and this might answer the question even better, but it's like, there's not one thing that sticks out necessarily, because he does it all the time. Mm. And so he is that guy that, you know, wants to get more shots up. He wants to, you know, stay longer. And I think, you know, the most amazing thing for him when it comes to the work, and we always look at these things as the literal on the court time, but what he has done and people talk about all the time, I'm still, you know, been in the league, you know, a few years, but not as long as some other people, but they just talk about from the beginning, how much he dedicated to off the court and taking care of his body. Mm-hmm. And so the amount of time that he does that, you know, with that, to me, that's hard work, you know, getting in the tub all the time, doing the rehab work and everything. So, yeah, the stories are true. He is a gym rat. He loves being around and in the gym, whether or not it's on the court. But I guess the short story, the most recent one, was when he came back to Cleveland. He actually had taken time off, and everyone that knows him had to ask him multiple times. They said, "Did you really, you know, take this much time off?" And he was like, yeah, I did it. And so I think he's starting to understand, you know, how his body works and how the season works. But yeah, we had to get verification and confirmation that he wasn't working, you know, the day after the season.
who's a player that, you know, because Colin does eat a lot of the press on the hardworking player circuit. Who's a player who really impresses you with their work ethic that maybe fans don't know about?
Yeah, so like you said, I don't know if Isaac's built up that reputation yet, but he, you know, from the second we drafted him, we were very confident that he would be a gym rat. And so he definitely fits the bill. But yeah, I think, you know, when it comes to, you know, a lot of these guys, it's always funny too, to answer your earlier question with the rookie and the veterans, where some of these guys, once they have a few years under the belt, their work ethic doesn't necessarily get worse. It just changes, it alters. And so you see some of these guys like, you know, Kevin Love, that when he is coming back from these injuries and he, you know, normally would have all this time on the court, but he can't necessarily be on the court, but you just see his dedication in the weight room and in the rehab. And, you know, he's on the side, push himself on the bike, hooked up to these machines and sweating. And you're like, man, this guy's going hard. But he really enjoys, you know, those types of things and puts, you know, forth that physical effort. And yeah, it just changes with time with the new guys and the veterans and kind of where they shift and allocate their time.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see what guys prioritize, where they want to kind of channel their efforts and energy. And I have to imagine as you get older and there's more bumps and bruises, you have to adjust, right? Like you have to kind of pick your spots. We talked about Darius's shot selection and that kind of being the key to him getting more three-point shots up. Do you feel it's the same situation with Sexton? Because when I look at Colin Sexton, his raw production is exceptional. Like at age 22, it's right up there with guys like Jamal Murray, Donovan Mitchell. But the biggest gap between him and those players that maybe get a little more natural attention is the change or the difference in the three-point rate. And to me, one of the things that kind of stands out is those pull-up jumpers, where he doesn't kind of create those as much. I think he was about 31% on pull-up threes, which is lower than all other situations. Is that a mentality thing where he just needs to get comfortable with those shots? Is that something mechanical? How does Sexton, in your eyes, take that next step and become a little more dynamic from the outside?
Yeah. So I think going back to his rookie season, myself and another staff member, we, you know, spent a lot of time with him, and his, like the amount of, if you go back to early, you know, rookie season, just the amount of mid-range jumpers he did take. And so that was a work in itself just to get him to start taking threes, because he would not even take them. And, you know, I forget the exact ratio, but it was almost like a, you know, 4-to-1 ratio of mid-range two to four mid-range twos to 1-3. And then that was like one of those achievements early on where we got that to, you know, almost shift, and it got to, you know, be like 2-to-1 or something threes. And that was in that first year. And that was also, you realize how long a season is because you can make those types of changes and everything. So yeah, I think that was big from a mindset standpoint, is just to get him to take threes. And the success that he had, you know, shooting that 40%, gave him the confidence that, okay, you know, I can shoot at this level. And then it became the volume. But I think something, you know, to kind of, you know, pivot just a little bit, but like something that he's done a great job and improved is getting to the line. And so, you know, we look at great scorers and they are, you know, the Dame, the Steph, the, you know, these guys that are, you know, consistently in the top 10 in scoring and point guards, and are at that size, you know, see them shoot threes, but you also see them get to the line. And every great scorer, you know, going dating back to the Mellos, the Kobe, Jordan, like all those guys, they got to the line a ton. And, and so I think that that's been something that he has added to his game, embraced, started to understand that, the nuances of, you know, we watch the playoffs and, you know, they're talking about rule changes with guys that are with the sweep and all these things that are going on. But, I think he's starting to embrace all levels of the game, but of course, you know, the volume of the threes and embracing, you know, even, you know, maybe a step back or increasing that range, will allow him to utilize that speed, that he has to get downhill and get to the rim. But yeah, I think, you know, slightly speeding up his shot in the range are something, some of the things that we're kind of focusing on with him.
Well, I mean, that's really interesting. And to me, it's just so nice to put a face and a name to the improvements that get us so excited. Like when we talk to our fans in the Discord and people on Twitter and whatnot, the one thing that is kind of unanimous is people are impressed with the Cavs player development, that these guys keep getting better. And no matter where they've picked, they've turned into really good players. Like Isaac Okoro impressed all rookie team. Darius Garland's made leaps. Colin Sexton continues to improve both as a scorer and a playmaker and a defender. Like it really, really is impressive. So I want to thank you so much, Andrew, for coming on the podcast. And as I said, putting a name and a face to the development that we've been seeing.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thanks for having me. And as you said, you know, one of your first comments, the, how large some of these organizations. And so, yes, I am one of the faces that we do have a team. We have, you know, a group of guys that put a ton of time and work and effort to making all this happen. And so, yeah, we're excited to show up to every day and work with these guys and them getting better, even better.
Well, thank you so much, Andrew. And I want to thank our listeners as well for tuning in. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you like and subscribe. If you are listening via podcast, leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. And until next time, go Cavs.